स्यादं कुर्वन्गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर कमिंग टू द कंक्लूजन ऑफ द सेवेंथ चैप्टर। सो दिस चैप्टर हैज थ्री सेक्शंस। द फर्स्ट सेक्शन वर्सेस 1 टू 12 टॉक्स अबाउट हाउ Krishna pervades everything, Krishna underlies everything. Knowledge of Krishna is actually knowledge of everything. Then we discussed from verses 13 to 24 about how, depending on whether people know Krishna properly or not, they either defy Krishna, they surrender to Krishna, or they surrender to something connected with Krishna, but not directly Krishna. That is, so 15th talks about those who don't surrender to Krishna. 16 to 19 talks about those who approach Krishna and eventually surrender to him. Bhajante is in 16 and Prapadyante is in 19. Then 20 to 23 talks about those who surrender to Krishnetara in the form of the devatas. And then 24 talks about those who approach the Brahman. Now param bhava majananto. So this bhava which we discussed, Sridhar Swami explains that the bhava actually refers to form of the Lord, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti also quotes this in his commentary. Bhava. So bhava, what is this higher param bhava, transcendental nature? That transcendental nature is that the Lord has a form, a personality, and he performs pastimes. And this higher nature they don't know. Param bhava majananto. His higher nature. Higher nature as, now somebody may say, no, the impersonal is actually the higher nature is the impersonal nature. But then Krishna has very clearly said in the same chapter, 7.7, Mattaha parataram na anyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. There is no truth higher than mine. So when he has so clearly stated that, it's unwarranted to say that there is some truth higher than Krishna. Now if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, there are some verses which can be interpreted in different ways. But if you look at the overall tenor and we look at the context of those verses also, we will see that the interpretation that the impersonal reality is the higher reality doesn't stand intellectual scrutiny. So now immediately after this, Parambhava Jananto, Krishna will give an indication of what is this Parambhava. And there also he doesn't talk about some impersonal Brahma, he talks about himself. So let's look at this verse. So this last section is explanation of how knowledge of Krishna leads to liberation. 7.14 has stated that mamaiva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite, and those who surrender to me will attain, will be cross over maya, will attain liberation. But how such a thing will happen has not been explained till now. So that is what Krishna, that will be explained in this section. So let us look at this. 7.25, naham prakash sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha moodhoyam na vijanati Loko mamajamamayam. So naham prakasha sarvasya. Actually, prakasha means manifested. So I am not manifested to everyone. Yoga maya samavritaha. I am covered by yoga maya. Mudho yam na bijanati. Mudho means the fools do not know me. Na bijanati. They do not know me. Why? Loko mam ajimavayam. They do not know that I am unborn and I am inexhaustible. Loko mam ajimavayam. So now if we see, actually in this verse, Krishna is talking about aham twice. He's talking about aham twice. So he's not talking about some reality higher than him. You see, aham, very clearly, I. So he says, I am not manifest to everyone. So who is that I that is being referred to? Krishna as a person is standing in front of Arjuna and he's saying, I am not manifest to everyone. Naham prakasha sarvasya. So why is he not manifest to everyone? Because actually Krishna reserves the right to reveal himself or conceal himself depending on his own sweet free will. So, in today's society, everybody wants to know about their rights, you know. So, for example, women have their rights. The lower castes, they have their rights. The colored people, the African Americans, they have their rights. So like that, different people have their rights. So among those different people who have their rights, what about the rights of Krishna? What about the rights of the Supreme Lord? You wonder, what is the right of the Supreme Lord? The right of the Supreme Lord is to decide whether he will reveal himself or not reveal himself. And even in this world, the more powerful a person, the more influential a person, that person can choose. You know, sometimes people say, if God exists, let him come in front of me. No, we are not the order givers to God. We are the order carriers of God. We can't demand the Prime Minister. If the Prime Minister exists, let him come here. No, we can't demand like that. If a child who is born in a tribe in a forest has never heard of the Prime Minister, and somebody tells him, you know, you're living in this part, this, your village, is just one small part of a huge country, and this entire country is actually controlled by the Prime Minister. So he says, who is the Prime Minister? I never seen him, I don't believe. No, I says, the Prime Minister, let him come here. If he doesn't come, within a count of 10, then he doesn't exist. Well, you tell him that, you know, what is needed is a count of the brain substance, of the brain tissues in his head. It is not that God has to, the Prime Minister has to come within a particular count. Actually, he has to understand the position of the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has a right. Even if somebody goes and meets the Prime Minister has the right whether to choose to meet or not meet that person. So if ordinary people have their rights, if powerful people have their rights, then what about Krishna, who is supremely extraordinary, supremely powerful? He has his rights. And Krishna says that, Naham prakash sarvasya, I do not become manifest to everyone. Now, why does Krishna not become manifest to everyone? Why does he let himself be concealed by Yoga Maya? Because he reciprocates according to our desires. We say, no, I want to see God. So he should reciprocate according to my desire and come in front of me. Now, when we say, actually, when Krishna reciprocates, it's not just according to our spoken desires. It's according to our overall mentality. Now, even when I want to see Krishna, let him come in front of me. If the attitude is one of defiance and not of dependence, then we cannot access Krishna. Why? Because ultimately we are Anu and Krishna is Vibhu. We are tiny and Krishna is mighty. So actually we can access Krishna only when we turn to him with devotion. Just as the person on the earth cannot demand sun rise. The sun will rise of its own accord, and when it rises, it will become manifest to the people. So similarly, Krishna, it is described that he has his own will and he chooses when to manifest, chooses when to not manifest. So if in our heart there is the desire to defy Krishna, then that means we think that I am God, I am supreme, or even if I am not supreme, and certainly Krishna is not supreme. Maybe there is no supreme only. Maybe nature is supreme. Maybe, you know, impersonal light is supreme. My own conception is supreme. Whatever. But certainly Krishna is not supreme. So this kind of attitude will not take us very far. This kind of attitude will keep us trapped in material existence. And in order to come out of material existence, we need to give up this attitude. So when Krishna sees that we want to be surrogate gods, that means we want to be substitute God, we want to play God, Krishna allows us to play God. And it doesn't reveal his omnipotence in the world except ultimately as death. So antasi, antaka, the death, that is called antaka, that is who does anta. So Krishna will manifest as death at that time and everything will be finished at that time. But that is not Krishna's cruelty. That is Krishna's arrangement by which we can continue to play our game if we want to, or we can wake up and realign ourselves with reality if we want to. So death acts as a reminder, as an educator, if we are going to take that education. If we don't want, then we can continue our misadventure lifetime after lifetime. But The point is that Krishna has his right. We cannot ask Krishna to come up before us with an attitude of defiance. You know, our attitude towards the sun cannot be of defiance. It has to be of dependence. Sun comes of its own accord, and when the sun comes, then we get benedicted by the warmth and the light that comes from the sun. Similarly, Krishna manifests by his own will, and Krishna is ready to manifest even at this moment. But it is not just our expressed desire, it is our underlying attitude that is important. So Krishna sees our attitude, and if our attitude is not the attitude of dependence, of service, of compliance, then Krishna will not manifest. So how do we show Krishna that we want to see him? Not by defiance, but by dependence and by compliance. Compliance means that we recognizing our subordinate position, start serving Krishna. Sevon mukhe hi jivvadav swayam eva spuratyadha. So, sevon mukhe hi jivvadav. When we start serving Krishna sincerely, seva unmukha, when we become unmukha towards Krishna, when we turn towards Krishna with an attitude of devotion, then jivvadav, beginning with the tongue, we start chanting and taking prasadam and serving Krishna. Swayam eva spuratyadha. Himself he becomes manifest by his own free will. So by we understand that we are tiny and Krishna is infinite, and Krishna wants us to choose whether to turn towards him and love him, or turn away from him and defy him and try to be independent of him. So for those who want to be independent of him, for them Krishna allows them to maintain their notion of independence by not revealing his glories. So even if they claim to be turning towards Krishna, even if they claim to be turning towards spiritual inquiry, as I want to know about God, where is God? Is God a person? No, it's an impersonal light. So people may seem to want to know about God, but often what they are doing is simply trying to impose their opinion on God. When they are doing that, then they are basically, in the name of trying to know God, they are trying to play God. So my opinion is the best. So therefore, mudho yamna bhijanati. Such people, Krishna doesn't reveal his glories to them. Krishna says they are mudho. Na amna mudho yamna bhijanati. These people cannot know. What they cannot know? Loko mam ajam avyayam. They cannot know that I am aja. I am imperishable. And avyaya. I am unborn and I am imperishable, inexhaustible. This means that Krishna is saying that I am infinite, I am beyond time. It is not that I came in existence in a particular time, and it is not that my existence will end at a particular time. Aja means no beginning, and avyaya means no ending. So this is actually a logical continuation of 7.24, where Krishna is telling that avyaktam yaktimapannam, that is unmanifest before and I have become manifest now. And those who think like this, they are abuddhayaha. So Krishna is similarly continuing the same point over here, and he says that actually I am ajaya and avyaya. And those who think that this particular form which I am manifesting in as Krishna, this is a particular beginning and a particular ending, they are mistaken. Krishna says, in this form itself I manifest at all times. So those who cannot understand him are mudha. So Krishna is revealing over here to us that what we need is not an attitude of defiance, but an attitude of compliance. When you follow his instructions, and gradually, progressively, and increasingly, Krishna will reveal himself to us. Now there is this interesting word over here, yoga maya samavritaha. So now Krishna is talking about here the covering. Now Krishna is talking about foolish people over here, mudha. So now mudhas will be covered by Mahamaya, not by Yogamaya. We know that there are these two categories of energies, Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So Mahamaya is the energy which allows people to enjoy separate from God by giving them false conceptions. That I am the body, I am a male or a female, I am separate, independent of God, and I can enjoy by gratifying my senses. So all such conceptions come because of Mahamaya. And contrasted with that, there is Yogamaya. Yogamaya is, we discussed earlier, how that is an oxymoron. Two contrasting words brought together to convey a deeper meaning. Yoga means connection with Krishna. Maya means disconnection with Krishna. So how can we have connection, disconnection? So the idea is that there is a disconnection with the and with the idea that God, Krishna is God, and there is a reconnection. Yoga, there is a reconnection with the understanding that actually this God is as God. This God is just a small boy. That's what Yashodamai thinks. This God is my friend. So all such notions are under Yogamaya. So Yogamaya is the illusion that increases devotion. Mahamaya is the illusion that depletes devotion. Yogamaya brings about the illusion that increases devotion. So then here the question comes up, why is Krishna using the word Yogamaya? So there are several understandings of this. First is that actually Krishna is referring to himself over here. He's not talking about, the covering is not so much to describe the conditioned soul. Krishna is describing himself. So Prabhupada translates precisely as, for them I am covered by my internal potency. So I am covered by my internal potency, that is true. But for whom? For them. Just like we discussed earlier, the cloud. For the people on the ground, the cloud, the sun is covered by the cloud. Although sun is far greater and cannot be covered by the cloud. So from Krishna's point of view, Yogamaya and Mahamaya are the same. How are they the same? Because both of them are ultimately the same energy. They're just performing different functions. Prabhupada would give the example of how a heater can be used, electric energy can be used to heat or it can be used to cool. Either way, the energy is the same. So therefore, actually, the energy is one, but it is having different functions. So because Krishna is talking in terms of his position, so he's saying that actually, when it comes to covering him, the point is that it is actually the Maya which does that. The word Yoga Maya is not necessarily used here in the same technical or categorical sense as the two categories, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. It is simply used in the sense that actually there is a covering agency which covers. So certainly the souls who mudho yam na vijanati, the mudha, that is not referring to the devotees like Yashodamai or Sudama or Sakhas like that, but it is referring to the what is two categories of people, especially second category of people, the demigod worshippers and the impersonalists. It's referring to the impersonalist. You say, I don't become I in my personal form, don't become manifest to such people. Because they do not understand my unborn and imperishable nature. So, now Prabhupada raises a simple point over here. That okay, Krishna is saying, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya. I am not revealed to everyone. But when Krishna was present on the earth, at that time was he not revealed to everyone? So when Krishna appears, there is something mysterious that happens. Actually, it is, Krishna may be available, accessible to the vision, but Krishna is not just seen with the eyes, he is seen with the heart. And if the heart doesn't have devotion, seeing Krishna with the vision doesn't help much. Devotion is the real vision that enables us to see Krishna. Without that, we cannot really see Krishna. We may see something, but we don't understand Krishna's position. So there are many warriors at the time of the Mahabharata war, and those warriors were thinking of Krishna not as the Supreme Lord. They were thinking of him as just another warrior. Yeah, very powerful warriors, killed many demons, but he's just another warrior. So Balramji, who was with Krishna, did not like this conception of the other kings, and he spoke strongly, determined to show his power. And even when Krishna showed his power, and still after that also there are people who did not accept Krishna's supreme position. We know in the canto, the description of a demoniac king, Paundraka, who claimed to be Krishna. And even when this Krishna, person who claimed to be Krishna, came in front of the real Krishna. Still that person continued his bragging. In fact, the messenger said that, actually you have taken my paraphernalia, return it to me. So the bogus Krishna is telling the real Krishna that you have taken my paraphernalia, you take my chakra, you have taken, return it to me, otherwise I'll come and punish you. So Krishna and all Yaduvasis laugh over there. And then they challenge him for battle. And when Pandava comes in the battle, and Krishna raises chakra, he says, you wanted my chakra? Here, take it. And he releases the chakra, and what happens? He just cuts off the neck of Pandava and comes back. So Krishna doesn't like those who defy his position. And he kills them not out of any hatred for them, but to save them from the offense that will come by pretending to be Krishna, usurping Krishna's position. So the whole point is, the Mudhas who are being referred to in this verse, they are the people who misunderstand Krishna's higher reality, personal reality. They think of Krishna as impersonal. And that's how Srila Prabhupada raises in the point. So he was manifested to everyone, but his supremacy, his position was not revealed to everyone. Then Prabhupada quotes this famous verse from the Ishopanishad, which we discussed earlier, Mantra 15. Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapi Hitamukham Tattvam Pushna Pavaruru Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. So your face is covered by effulgence. Please remove the effulgence so that I can see your true nature. Tattva Dharmaya Drishtaye. Now, here after Krishna explains very categorically how he is the Supreme Being, now he starts saying that these people, they are an illusion who are trying to catch me. So going backwards, we know that Krishna has already talked about his supreme position. And let us look at it further. Vedaham sumati tani vartamanani cha arjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. So vedaham sumati tani. Samatitani means completely, samatit. So Vedaham samatitani, vartamanani charjana. Samatitani means complete past, I know. Vartamanani, vartamanani is present. Cha Arjuna, oh Arjuna, I know past, present. Bhavishyani cha bhutani, I know the future also. Bhutani, all living beings, I know. Bhutani mam tu veda. So all living beings I know, but me, no one knows. Na kashchana. What does it mean when Krishna says, me no one knows? Krishna is telling that, okay, people may know me as a historical person. Krishna may know me as a person whom some other people consider to be Supreme God. But they don't understand who I actually am. And that can be understood only through devotion. That will be discussed in the 18th chapter. Of course, it will be discussed in several places repeatedly also. Now in this context, here, Krishna is assuring Arjuna, Arjuna, don't worry. You know, you are concerned about what is going to happen to your relatives whom you have to kill. Just don't worry about that. Actually, I am going to ensure that they will be well taken care of. If they are pure enough, they will get liberated and return back to me. If not, they will take birth in another life. But I have shown you what even the partial performance of devotional service can give. What result it can give. Therefore, how much greater is the result that one can get by wholeheartedly engaging in devotional service. And that's what one should try to do. When one tries to do that, then one will get elevated. Ultimately liberated. So how can Krishna know the future? And this is a complex question and there are no easy answers, but I'll try to explain this first of all by analyzing a little bit what do we mean by future. Now there are futurologists. Alvin Toffler was one of them. So like that, there are many futurologists. They try to look at the world and they think about its future. What is the future going to be like? And they try to act accordingly. So they try to prepare society also to act. So astrologers are there who help people to understand what is going to happen in the future. Some people, other people who have all sort of mystical rituals when their particular area is going to be attacked and destroyed by the inevitable power of time, then these living entities, they try to take shelter, but they can't take shelter of anything. So ultimately they will all be destroyed. So we all want to protect ourselves, and for that purpose we want to know what is going to come in the future, but we can't. So when Krishna says, I know the future also, does it mean that Krishna knows the future and our future is programmed? Now we have to understand that Krishna's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. What does it mean? Krishna's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. Our knowledge of the past is knowledge without control. Now, if I know yesterday night I wanted to sleep for 7 hours, but I slept for 15 hours. 15 hours a bit too much. Maybe I slept for 7 hours, I slept for 10 hours. Then I know that, but I can't change it now. It's knowledge without control. We can think about the past, we can observe the past, but we can't change it. So when I say Krishna's knowledge of the past is like our knowledge of the future, what it essentially means is that the conceptions are similar, although there are some differences also. The major difference is that Krishna's position is different from ours. So even time is his servant, and because time is his servant, therefore, actually speaking, all time destroys all living beings. So all living beings are ultimately his servants. So when Krishna goes home, in his past times he goes home, at that time, does he act as if he knows what is going to happen in the future? Although he is within his pastimes and he knows everything that is going to happen. But he doesn't act that way. Why? Because his goal is not to prove his divinity. His goal is to reciprocate with the love of his devotees. And therefore when Yashoda Mahi says, oh, are you hungry? He says, yes, lunch got over very quickly. I was very hungry. And Yashoda Mahi says, come Krishna, quickly. Just wash your face, take a quick bath and food is ready for you. Please come and take it. So then she offers Krishna and Balaram a big, big feast. So now, in one sense, now we are trying to understand the future from this, first to understand the point of future from the spiritual perspective and then from the material perspective, or with respect to the spiritual world and with respect to the material world. So actually speaking, when Krishna is in the spiritual world, there also he knows everything. But at the same time, when he is involved in the pastime, he forgets that he knows anything. That's how Krishna may do certain things to enhance the rasa, to increase the leela of his pastimes. How does he increase the rasa? How does he enhance the leela of his pastimes? By creating the sense of unpredictability, which is resolved by his intervention alone. So how does he do this? For example, somebody might be having some sort of issues. So just like a student is studying, student has free will whether to study or to not study. Now, when the teacher is observing the student, this is a rough example, but it will illustrate the principle to us. Now, Krishna, he is all-knowing. The teacher may not be all-knowing, but still the teacher can also see. Okay, these are the trajectories. The student studies, the student will do like this, and the student will develop an educated mind, will develop the culture of hard work, and will eventually attain success. But on the other hand, if Krishna doesn't do that, then what will happen? Not Krishna, sorry, the student doesn't do that, then what will happen? The student will fail. So the pathways are there, and depending on the choice of the pathway, there will be an inevitable result after that. So what Krishna reveals is something similarly. Now Krishna is God, he can know the future, he can change the future. Now Krishna doesn't even have to give us free will. He can make us act as robots, completely obeying his command. But that's not what Krishna does. Krishna gives freedom. Krishna gives freedom by which he allows us to be tasted, but he also allows us to become purified by that, by seeing how trivial it is to bother about these things. Better bother about developing a relationship with me. Better focus on developing ourselves spiritually, because that alone will lead to lasting benefit. Aham tu vedana kaschana. So Krishna is throwing a challenge to Arjuna's spirit, trying to direct him away from the fear which has paralyzed Arjuna. He is saying that, actually, why should I fight? That is Arjuna's question originally. So Krishna is replying, why should you not fight? Why should you not fight? Now Krishna knows the result in the future, what is going to happen. So Krishna knows Abhimanyu is going to die, Krishna knows Jayadratha is going to die. But still Krishna lets the fight go on, because his goal is to perform a leela. A leela doesn't mean that people don't misuse their free will. It is actually, we have free will, but there are trajectories. And depending on the trajectory that we choose, we'll get a consequent result. So as devotees, we should not worry unnecessarily about these sort of things. Oh, where did this, what happened to this person, what will happen to me, what will happen to that person. No, we just keep doing our devotional service steadily. And eventually, by Krishna's mercy, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, the inner presence of Krishna, the inner revelation of Krishna, will happen within our hearts. We have to understand that. It will happen. We just have to be patient and perseverant. Just keep going on, and then that will happen. So Krishna is saying, Mam tu vedana kashchana, me no one knows. Prabhupada gives the same cloud example over here in the purport. Now Krishna goes to a new topic now. Ichha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. So kama krodha samutka, sorry, ichha dvesha samuttena, so because of desire and because of dvesha, aversion, of attachment and aversion, samuttena, together timed, samuttena, dvandva mohena bharata. There is a delusion, two kinds of delusions, dvandva mohena bharata. When there is no dvandva, then what happens? Sarubhu, that dvandva is actually the cause of suffering for all living in the forest. Bhutani sammoham. All living beings become deluded. Sarge yanti parantapa. Sarge yanti. Sarge yanti means at the time of giving birth. So when the universe is born, how is everything? Sarubhutani sammoham. Sarge yanti. That means sarvabhutani sammoham. Actually, all living beings are born in illusion. How is that? You know, we may say happy birthday to a friend or to ourselves, but you know, the sad truth is that we are not happy when we are born, when on our birthday. We are crying. Of course, there is a joy that a new life is born. That joy is not to be taken away. But at the same time, the fact is that birth in and of itself is not a joyful experience. There is pain. And for the mother is also screaming in pain. The end result is definitely joyful. The new life comes into the world. But and that new life is not just a life that comes to the world. That life can go successfully out of the world. If the parents practice devotional service and share devotional service with the child, then the child can become their liberator. The child later on becomes spiritually centered in one's life. So that is what Krishna allows us. But sarvabhutani sammoham sarge yanti. Actually, all living beings are born into illusion. So we have to become liberated from that illusion. And for becoming liberated from that illusion, we need to move forward steadily, 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 steadily. So 1, 2, 3, 4. We take small, small baby steps in our spiritual life. And as we keep taking these baby steps, ultimately we'll discover that we have done so much in Krishna's service, how amazing it is. But we are all born in illusion. So now where does the illusion come from? So Krishna has used two words over here, sammoha and dvandva moha. So what is the difference between the two, sammoha and dvandva moha? So let's look at the literal translation to understand this. Ichha dvesha samuttena. That by the combination of ichha and dvesha. So ichha and dvesha can refer to many things. Here ichha can refer to the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, and dvesha can refer to the resentment, the hatred about Krishna's position as the enjoyer. So ichha dvesha samuttena. So generally we have ichha for that which we like and dvesha for that which we do not like. So this word ichha dvesha has been used many times. But if you look at this context, it's the 7th chapter where Krishna gives knowledge of the absolute. And further, Krishna had asked for Krishna is giving knowledge about himself, and here Krishna is talking about his own position. So here ichha dvesha refers not generically just attraction and aversion. Krishna is referring to actually with his context. That means when a person has a ichha to enjoy separate from Krishna and has a dvesha for Krishna being the enjoyer, and for those who are serving Krishna, accepting Krishna to be the enjoyer. So samutthena, so ichha dvesha is samutthena. There is, from this ichha and dvesha, what happens is, because we like something, we don't like things, therefore, We think when we get the what we like, we call it as good. When we get that which you don't like, we call it bad. Yasmat priya priyaviyoga sanyoga janma shokakrina sakala yoni shudhayamanaha. So Prahlad Maharaj says that that which is priya, when there is vayoga, separation from that, we call it misery. When there is apriya and there is sanyoga to that, then we call it pleasure. But when there is priya and priya, then there is a problem. So actually, Icha dvesha samuthena. So when there is isma, so when there is, we get that which is priya, then there is happiness. When we get that which is apriya, there is, when there is viyoga from the priya, that means the priya is taken away, then there is misery. When there is priya, sanyoga with the, sanyoga means union. When we are united with the undesirable, we suffer. When we are separated from the desirable, we suffer also. Those are the two ways in which you can suffer. So, I want a sweet to eat and there is no sweet, then I suffer. On the other hand, I don't want a particular, maybe a sabji, bitter gourd sabji, I don't want a sabji, that very sabji is there. Then also there is suffering. So when we don't get what we want, and when we get what we don't want, then we suffer. So basically then we start labeling things. What does suffering mean? Hey, this is bad, this is good. So we label generally things based on our own likes and dislikes. So Icha and Dvesha lead to Dvanda Moha. And so Dvanda Moha is the illusion of duality. But, so Prabhupada is saying, bewildered by dualities. But the overall setup of a worldview, where there is Icha and Dvesha, that is called a Sammoha. So Sammoha means Samyak Rupena Moha. The complete illusion that is there, that is Sammoha. So what is the difference once again? Actually, you know, there is a foundational illusion. Just like when a person goes to watch a movie, at that time, that person sits down and then forgets that I am a spectator and thinks that I am actually a vicarious participant. Vicarious means I identify with someone and then I try to enjoy based on that identification. So, now within the movie, certain things happen which you may like and certain things which you may not like. So, when the hero is with the heroine, we will like it. When the hero is being beaten by the villain, we will not like it. So, there is this point of dvandva, good and bad, within the movie also. And the dvandva is based on Icha Dvesha, what we like and what we don't like. But this whole getting up, getting into the setup of Icha and Dvesha, and then Priya and Priya because of that, Dvandva Moha, that all that has happened because of the Sammoha. Sammoha is the, first of all, the desire that I want to watch the movie. So when I start watching the movie, there are certain things which I like, certain things which I don't like, and then I label them as good or bad. That is an illusion. But foundationally, wanting to watch the movie itself is an illusion. So he's saying that all living beings are born into this delusion. Sarvabhutani sammoham sarge yanti. All living beings are born into the illusion of material existence, where they think of themselves as separate from me. So, what is the connection between this verse and the previous verse? You know, the previous verse was saying that Krishna says, I am free from illusion. So, let's look at these three verses. 25th was saying that I am not visible to everyone. I am not manifest to everyone. 26 says that I know everything. And 27 says that actually, the sarvabhutani are sammoha. All living beings are deluded. So, here Krishna is clearly differentiating between his position and the position of the living entity. Just like we earlier gave the example of sun, clouds and the person on the earth. So the observer on the earth is covered by the clouds, but the sun is not covered by the clouds. So Krishna is like the sun, the illusory potency is like the cloud, and the living entity is like the person on the earth. So the living entity may for some time temporarily feel that as if I am liberated. So the cloud just moves a little bit. So you start thinking, I am starting to see. But the clouds are much bigger. So one cannot remove the clouds by one's own effort. You know, it's not like cobwebs in the roof that I just move around and remove the cobwebs like that. There's no stick that which I can reach the clouds and tuck, shake away the clouds. I want to see the sun. I can't do anything like that. I have to depend on divine grace. This verse can often be used to refer to the origins. Ultimately, the question of origins, how we fell away from the spiritual world, is a vexed question. How we originally came here, and where, that is a vexed question. Why vexed? Because that which is beyond the conception of time and space is very difficult to understand within the conception of time and space. That's why when Prabhupada was pressed on this question, Prabhupada would often give the example that when a person is drowning in the ocean, one should think primarily about getting out, not bother too much about how one fell into the ocean. So still, the point is Ichha and Dvesha. So in the biblical tradition, there is the story of Adam and Eve. And Adam was tempted by Eve, and Eve was tempted by Satan. Satan came as a snake. And Adam and Eve were in the original Garden of Eden. And in the Garden of Eden, everything was wonderful. And they had lots of fruits and food to eat. And they could play around over there, enjoy. And God has told them, don't eat this one fruit from this tree. So Satan came along as a snake. And Satan told Eve. He said that, this is a story in the biblical tradition. So, he says, you know, why don't you eat that fruit? He says, no, God has told her don't eat it. But no, it's a delicious fruit. Do you know why God has told don't eat it? He says, no, why? Because if you eat it, you will become God. It's a delicious fruit, it's so powerful, you will become God. And he doesn't want competition. Oh, really? If I eat it, I will become God. He said, yes, go and eat it immediately. So Eve went and told Adam. And when they told Adam, then Adam said, no, God has told, don't eat, we should not eat it. We should be obedient. He said, no, I want to eat it. And then they both went and ate it. And after that, it said that they suddenly became conscious. They were unclothed at that time. But before that, they did not even realize that they were unclothed. But they became conscious. And when they became conscious that way, then God came back. And when God came to know about it, he was displeased by the disobedience, by the defiance. And that's how the fall from Eden. Eden is the primeval pristine garden from which it fell. So now this story is not exactly literal. You know, in one sense, all of us, we are Adam. You know, there is a palindrome, Madam, I am Adam. So actually, every one of us is Adam. You know, every one of us defied the Supreme Lord. So this story is symbolic. It illustrates how, by going against the will of God, the soul falls. So there are various explanations that the soul has a desire to enjoy. The soul is happy in the spiritual world with Krishna, but still the soul has not explored life separate from Krishna. And that's how the soul desires to enjoy separate from Krishna. And that's how the soul comes here to the material world. Other souls may sometimes desire to serve in a way that is not possible in the spiritual world. That is by, say, creation. And so the soul becomes Brahma in this world. And when the soul becomes Brahma, soul tries to enjoy, soul doesn't have the desire to enjoy separate from God. But because this is the arena of Maya, after coming here, the soul starts getting lower desires. And then from Brahma's position, the soul starts going downwards. So, there are explanations like this. So, the soul has free will. Prabhupada explains, free will means it has to be free. And the very meaning of free will is that there has to be an arena for exercise of that free will. If there is no arena for the exercise of free will, then there is no meaning to free will. So, the arena for exercise of free will is the spiritual world, where we can freely choose to serve Krishna. But if we choose not to serve Krishna, if we choose to do something else, then there has to be an arena for that also. And that arena is the material world. So, you know, even in this world, we see that logic doesn't necessarily lead to any absolute conclusion, especially with respect to behaviors. You know, even in this world, when we see a boy falls in love with a girl, then it's not that there are logical reasons why the boy and girl fall in love with each other. And even when people fall out, you know, people fall in love and they fall out of love also. So when they fall out, sometimes that leads to they break out. If they're dating, then they may break up. If they're having their marriage and their serious problems, they may have divorce. So now, it's not that there may be some specific events, some specific behaviors which lead to the disruption of the relationship. But it's not an exact science. You know, because of this happened. Relationships and emotions in general are not precise. And that's why a person has to actually, for sustaining relationships, one has to become actually emotionally sharp. One has to be emotionally alert so as to be reciprocate properly with others and maintain relationships in that way. The point is that actually why the soul chose to go apart from Krishna, we understand the soul has free will, and free will means that the soul can use the free will whichever way the soul wants. So the soul can choose to go away from Krishna, and Krishna allows the soul to do that. So that's how the soul becomes born in this world. Sarvabhutani sammoham sargeyanti. All living beings are born into illusion in this way. Now one may wonder, is this illusion permanent? Is this illusion irreversible? Is it that we have to always be in material existence? No. We can become purified and we can become liberated. And again Krishna will talk about it in the 8th chapter again. We'll see that now. It'll come up. But then the question may come up, okay, if I was there, if we go back to the spiritual world, what is the guarantee that we will not fall back? So this is very beautifully analyzed by Baldev Vidyabhushan in his commentary to the Govinda Bhashya, which is a commentary on the Vedan Sutra. In the last aphorism, last sutra of the Vedan Sutra is Anavritti Shabdat. So, Anavritti. This is of course explained differently by different acharyas. Srila Prabhupada explains Anavritti Shabdat as by sound vibration, Anavritti. There will be uncovering of consciousness that will happen. So, Avaran is covering, Anavritti is uncovering of consciousness that will happen by sound. So, anavrittihi can also mean something different. Krishna talks, for example, punaravartino Arjuna. So, punaravartino is to come back here again. So, though there are most living entities, come back to this material world. But anavritti, anavritti means will not come back. So, shabdat means, so say the scriptures. So, anavritti shabdat. Well, Baldev Vidyabhushan explains that this means that the scriptures declare that there will be no return over here. The one will not return to material existence. So he says that when the living entity attains liberation, the living entity will not return back to material existence. Why? Because of multiple reasons. He says one reason is, among the many reasons, first of all it's a scriptural promise, Shabdat. Scripture is saying, and scripture gives us the absolute truth in the word of God. And then he further says, that actually the Lord loves His devotees and the Lord is Bhakta Vatsal. So the Lord will ensure that those devotees who have truly loved Him and have rejected the pleasures of this world for His sake, you know, He will never reject them. He will always hold them in a tight embrace and keep them forever with Him. And He will never let them fall back into material existence. And then further He says that actually the devotees love the Lord. And the devotees have sacrificed everything for the sake of the Lord. And once they have attained the object of love, and the object of love is so completely satisfying and fulfilling, why will the soul come? Why will such devotees ever want to come back to the Lord? So based on, of course, you know, originally we came because we did not know what was the reason. We do not know about life separate from Krishna, how horrible it can be. But when we return back to Krishna, it is not that constantly we will be remembering material existence. But once we are back with Krishna, we will know that if at all sometimes a desire comes up, then immediately Krishna will give us the remembrance of the consequences. And it will all be like a nightmare. No, I don't want to go into that again. So because of having the experience, because of the reassurance of the Lord, because of the nature of the love of the Lord for the devotee, and because of the nature of the love of the devotee for the Lord, it can be said guaranteed that we will not come back. So that is the ultimate liberation. Sarvabhutani sammoham. So although all of us are deluded, all of us can ultimately be liberated. And once we are liberated, we will not come back again to this world. Now Krishna says that, okay, all living beings are born to illusion. How can they become free from illusion? He says, he describes that in the next verse, 7.28. Yesham tvantagatam papa jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridhavrataha yesham tvantagatam papam. That when the papa, for those people, papa has ended. and Janaanam Punya Karmana. They have performed Punya for a Janaanam, those people, they have performed Punya. And when are they performed Punya? Prabhupada explained this as well as previous lives. Considerable Punya they have performed. Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta. They will become free from Moha. The Moha of Dvandva. And then Bhajante Maam Drudhavrataha. They will start worshipping me determinedly. So what is the point of this verse? You have to understand it in the flow. So first Krishna said that, in 14th he said, if you know me, you can become liberated. Then in 25 he says, not everyone knows me. But Krishna says, I am not under illusion. The living entities are under illusion. So how can they come out of illusion? So Krishna is telling over here, if they give up papa and they do punya, then they will come to the position where they can do my bhakti steadily, dhrudhavrata, determinedly. So here Krishna is talking about how one can become a serious, steady devotee. So for that we have to give up sinful activities and we have to do pious activities. Now, in principle, devotional service can be started from any mode. Now, even a person who is a drunkard, person and there is a devotee we were doing in kirtan, and the person is drunk and in a drunken stupor the person starts dancing. And that time also starts singing. So that person is also performing a devotional service in some way. Chanting the holy names, hearing the holy names. But that person who is in a drunken stage, who is a state, who is in a mode of ignorance, that person cannot every day wake up and chant Hare Krishna and Mangalarti. No. If one has to do that, Bhajante Maam Drudhavrataha. So a little bit bhajan, now Krishna has used the word bhajan earlier, Chaturvidha Bhajante Maam. In 7.16, four kinds of people come to me. He has said that. But the point is that not all these four kinds of people, they will be steady. And that's why Krishna says among them, Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhakti Rishishyate. In 7.17, he says among these, the Jnani is the best. Because this Jnani will steadily keep practicing because it's not motivated by anything material, but it's motivated by on the platform of knowledge. So Krishna is telling that if one wants to become steady, one has to become free from sin and one has to do piety. So as devotees, we know there are the regulative principles, and when we break those regulative principles, we commit sinful activities. We commit sinful activities that lead to consequences which we have to avoid. These consequences, when we avoid them, then we move forward and we render devotional, we practice devotional service by that way. Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta. So actually the Dvandva Moha is always there, but the Dvandva Moha is far, far crippling when it is in ignorance or passion. Okay, in ignorance, the Dvandva Moha, the duality is that one doesn't like anything which is connected with goodness or transcendence. One just likes that which is connected with ignorance. So one likes to smoke, one likes to drink, one may like to take drugs, do violence. In goodness also there is dvandva. This is good and this is bad. But a dvandva of goodness is much, much closer to reality than is the dvandva of ignorance. So duality is always there within three modes. And ultimately when we come to transcendence, the dvandva goes completely. And that is when we attain liberation. So Krishna is telling over here, when one keeps doing piety, keeps avoiding sin, then gradually the effect of the lower modes decreases, and the effect of the lower modes decreases, and one becomes situated more and more in goodness, and then eventually from goodness one can come to transcendence, and one is in the state of goodness transcendence, one can practice bhakti steadily, dhrudhavrataha. So Krishna is not talking about initiating bhakti over that. He has talked about 7.16 already. He's talking about installing oneself in bhakti steadily. So for that one needs to give up sinful activity, and we will also see in our spiritual life that to the extent we succumb to sin, to that extent our bhakti will be unsteady. Actually, the succumbing to sin itself is a break in bhakti. But along with that also, when we succumb to sin, before that there is temptation, and after that there is lamentation. And they also, so it's like we are going on this level of consciousness, and whenever there is sin, it's like a fall. But before the fall, there is temptation. Oh, should I do it? Should I do it? Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? I want to do it. No, I will not do it. I will do it. But that whole agitation is there. And then after do it also, you know, I did it. Why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. And I'm so fallen. But, so there's lamentation. And then what happens? We go a little bit, and again, then same temptation, then lamentation. So this keeps us going, keeps our con- it doesn't allow us consciousness to stay steady, or to speak of go upward steadily. It is just, we keep falling down. So when we start avoiding sinful activities determinedly, we'll let the process of bhakti work. It's like bhakti, see, if we consider our heart to be like a wood, then the wood has to be lit. For that, some flame comes from elsewhere and lit. So like that, our heart is illumined with bhakti when we come in contact with the bhakta. So whenever we associate with devotees who are serious practitioners of bhakti, then in that association we also get bhakti. Our heart becomes illumined. But if the wood is wet, you know, then the contact doesn't really cause the wood to catch fire. Maybe a little bit part of the wood that is dry may catch fire. But if the wood is to steadily catch fire, then that wood has to be first dried, and then further fall of water on that wood has to be avoided. Similarly, when our heart is in tamoguna, that is like the wood is wet. And when the wood is wet, we can't really make much steady spiritual practice. That's why these two things, giving up sin and doing piety, that helps our heart to come to goodness. And then bhakti can go forward steadily. So bhakti can be started in any mode, but for bhakti to be sustained, goodness is important. And then we can do drudha vrataha bhakti, steady devotional service. So that's why Prabhupada quotes in this verse, that foster steady devotional service, for giving up sin and for starting to do good activities. What is needed? Is mahadvaram mahatsevam dvara harimukti. We have to serve the great souls. And tamo dwaram yoshitam sangi sangam. You have to give up the association of non-devotees, materialistic people, those who are attached to material enjoyment, and we have to associate with those who are great devotees. Then by that we can make steady spiritual advancement. Now Krishna will introduce two more verses, in which he will introduce some terms. So, jara marana mokshaya mama shritya tantiye te brahma tadvidho krishnam adhyatmam karma chakhilam. So jara marana mokshaya, so those who understand the miseries of material existence, jara and marana, old age and death, they mokshaya, to get liberation from that, what do? Mama ashritya, they take shelter of me, yatantiye, and they start endeavoring. So what will happen eventually? What is the situation? Te brahma tad vidhu krishnam. They are actually te brahma. Krishna is saying they are brahma and they know everything. Adhyatmam karma chakhilam. They know everything about transcendental activity. So Krishna has introduced two words over here. Brahma and adhyatma. And this Arjuna will ask in the, what does it mean? Arjuna will ask in the next verse about this. So here, this is actually another category of a devotee. So Krishna has talked about different kinds of devotees who come to him. So let's look at this. So Krishna has talked about four kinds of people who approach him. So actually this four he has talked about in 7.16, but as for analytical says, we'll say that there are 7.16 towards Artho Jigyasur Artharthi. They are Sakam devotees. They come for some material purpose. Then Tesham Gyanin Yukta 7.17, 18, 19. That is the Gyana Mishra devotee. Of course, 19, other three can also become Gyanavan. So this is Gyana Mishra, the person who has Gyana, and then that person starts practicing bhakti. Now in 7.20, this particular verse, it's 7.29 actually. This is Moksha Kami Bhakta. Now the moksha kami means one who is aspiring for liberation. And we'll discuss in 8.12. Krishna will talk about yoga mishra bhakti. So what is this mishra bhakti? We'll discuss a little later. But the important point here is that Krishna is talking about different categories of devotees. So there are five different categories of devotees which are being talked about. So two sakam and two moksha kami. The moksha kami can be jnana mishra, that means the person wants liberation, but is coming primarily with the intellectual conception. Or the person will be Yoga Mishra. That person will be coming from a from the background of yogic practice. So, but they all come to Mahamahashtritya. They come and surrender to Krishna, and by that they make spiritual advancement. So now Krishna will introduce one more term over here. So one more set of terms in this verse. Sadhi bhuta adhi daivam mam sadhi yagyam cha ye vidu prayana kale piche mam te vidur yukta chetasah. So Krishna introduces three terms over here again. Sa adhi bhuta adhi daiva and adhi yagyam. So what these words are will be a question of Arjuna in the next chapter, and Krishna will answer also briefly. And then he will, Krishna mention the further important, prayana kale pichamam, that those who understand me to be adhibhut, adhidaiva, adhiyakya, such people, they will be well situated even at the time of prayana kala. So prayana kala was referred earlier in 2.72. Eshate brahmi siti partha nainam prapyamuniti sitva asyam antakalepi brahma nirvanam ruchati. If the person can be situated like this at antakal, the person will attain brahma nirvana. So here also antakal and prayana kal, same thing. So Krishna is saying those who know me to be the ultimate truth, they will be yukta chetasaha, they will be well situated even at the time of prayana kal, and the implication is by that they will attain me. So essentially in this section from 25 to 30, what has Krishna told? Krishna has said that his position is supreme. He is not revealed to everyone. But if somebody wants to come to know him, then they have to practice, to study devotional service. Study devotional service when they practice, and they give up sinful activities, do study pious activities and become determined in devotional service. By that, they will understand all these things. They will understand Brahma, they will understand Adhyatma. And most importantly, they will understand Krishna as the ultimate reality, as Adhibhuta, Adhidaiva and Adiyagya. And such people, they will be well situated at the time of death, and ultimately they will attain liberation. So in this way, in the seventh chapter, knowledge of the absolute. So it has three sections. First, how the absolute pervades and underlies everything. Then how everybody is ultimately, whatever they are doing, it's in some relation with the absolute. Defying, obeying or serving something connected with the absolute. But when we surrender to the Absolute, when we understand the Absolute Truth as the Absolute Truth, when we understand Krishna to be the Absolute Truth, then we attain supreme auspiciousness. We attain absolute auspiciousness. Yukta Chetasaha. That's the overview of the chapter. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.